Hi, everybody. That sun is bright. I guess there's nothing I can do about that. So you can see me anyway. So tonight I want to talk about right speech, or ethical speech, or whatever you want to call it. So in our Buddhist practice, right speech or ethical speech comes from non-discriminating consciousness. Underlying non-discriminating consciousness, which is the basis of everything, which is everything, and which is when there's no dividedness, and everything is interdependent. Everything is changing places and doesn't even know what it is. It's just doing its thing, just in movement. It's in movement. It's undivided. It's undivided, and there's a feeling of connectedness. And right speech or ethical speech emanates from that or points to it. And speech that's not right, quote, or ethical, whichever term you prefer, doesn't point to that. Points away from it. Points to schism. Points to lack of trust. Lack of feeling of connectedness to each other and the world around us. So that's my very simple definition of ethical speech, right speech. So in our culture, in 2015, we are bombarded with communication. Maybe not feel like we're bombarded. Maybe we're inundated with communication. Maybe it's not bombarding us. Maybe it's inundating us. iPhones, iPads, Twitter, Facebook, and then all of those advertisements, television, all that old stuff, all that old-fashioned stuff, right? We're bombarded. Oh, emails. Emails. Bombarded or inundated with communication. And a lot of it's pretty trashy. But it tells us what to, we get ideas from it about what we should be wearing, what we should be eating, who to vote for, everything. I give this talk on Sunday, and I said that if I got any more calls from the DFL or any more emails, I was not going to vote for any of them ever again. Inundated, right? Inundated. So this comes into our consciousness and really becomes who we are. We become this stuff. Of course, some of it we don't allow in, but everything, the stuff we allow in, we become. We become that. So no wonder we feel disoriented or discombobulated or separate from each other, from the world. So meditation, which I know you all are becoming accomplished at in your own way, meditation is a fasting of getting inundated from the outside, fasting from that. If you want to get a taste of deep connectedness, you have to do this fasting. This fasting. And you need to do it daily, close to daily. I suggest that. I recommend that. And then sometimes immerse yourselves in periods of fasting. In retreats, we have no reading. We have no writing. We have no talking. That's a form of fasting from getting this, having this stuff just come in. Then we can just deal with the stuff that's here already without creating any more. You can just deal with it, what's here already, without creating any more. Which is plenty, don't you think? It's plenty. It's Some of you find it more than plenty because you like stuff coming from the outside, because then you don't have to deal with this stuff, because you can always be stimulated, always be, but we fast from that. We fast from that so we can sink into non-discriminating awareness, or just don't, that's a big fancy word, just connectedness, a feeling of connectedness to everything, to everyone, just to one person, just to one thing, and that's to everything, if you really feel that way. That's to everything. So there's a retreat coming up this month. There's one every month. This month, I think I'm supposed to remember so I can give an advertisement for it now. I think it's going to be July 17 on a Saturday. Is it, Bill? Good. Well, come one, come all. Wanda Isle, one of the graduates of my rigorous training program, will be leading the retreat. And she is cool, you guys. She is cool. but there's no talking. Although you can see her in one-to-one if you'd like. So we have the potential to disengage from our thinking if we do mind fasting, to disengage from it. Without mind fasting, without fasting from our communication, it's very difficult, if not impossible, to disengage, because there's all these new stuff to process, to get excited about, to get pissed about, to negotiate, to argue about, et cetera, right? Always new stuff. Welcome to 2015. And I don't even do Twitter and Twatter and all those things. I hear that Twitter is becoming passé. My son told me Twitter's passé. I don't know, what's something else now, right? I don't know. Pretty soon it'll be my grandson. Well, that's cool. This is not stuff to put down. It's cool. But this is our practice. This is our practice to do this, to settle into where we are. Just to settle into where we are. So that's our practice. That's our sitting practice. However, most of our lives we still will spend in discriminating consciousness. We're human beings. We discriminate. That's a unique and wonderful feature of being human beings. I'm not saying that animals don't discriminate, but they discriminate in a different kind of way. But we have our own unique way of discriminating. So, but we want our speech to point toward or emanate from this feeling of interconnectedness. Okay? That's what we want to do. That's what we want to do. So, this takes discipline. It takes effort. It's a skill we develop, the skill of ethical speech, the skill of right speech, which is not the opposite from wrong speech. Then you get all tangled up in right and wrong. So that's why I'm not sure about the word right. I'm not sure about the word ethical. Connected speech. Connected. So what are the components? What are the components of this ethical speech, this right speech? Well, one is, as much as possible, not blurting stuff out. Not blurting stuff out. Being sensitive to the other person before you talk. Words are precious. Being sensitive. Being sensitive to them. What you're feeling from them. What you're getting from them. Being sensitive to them. Their tone of voice, the emotional atmosphere, their expression, their body language, and our conversation can go deeper. It just can go deeper. So that's why electronic communicating is fine, but not for deep speech, not for right speech. Fine, but if you have something you want to share with someone, on more than just the surface level, you have time to meet with them. You have time to just hang out with them. You have time to just visit with them. Your time isn't that. If you say something emotional in your email, they don't see your body. They don't feel your heart. They don't notice your affect. And then what do you do to them? And then what do they do to you? And right? So, and I'm speaking to myself here too. I'm speaking to myself because I've done this too. Just one little email. I only said four words. Everyone in my family. Right? So let's be careful. Let's make some effort and some discipline. Kind discipline, not shame. Piper shame discipline. Through listening, through deep listening, we gain sensitivity to connect. That's why when I have one-to-ones with people, which I do regularly, and I'd be glad to have them with any of you, have them upstairs in my office, and I always start off with a couple minutes of silence. A couple minutes of breathing together. Because only when we dampen the external noise do we have a chance to really share in a kind way, and in an honest way, in an open way. And often, when we're in communication, we're anticipating, as I'm listening to Stacy, I'm anticipating what I'm going to be saying when she's done. Well, then we're both talking at the same time. I'm being silent in my talking. I'm being the Zen teacher. I got my own monologue going, so that when she's done, then I do my monologue. Then she starts her monologue when she's listening to me. And so we have these dual monologues going on in the same conversation. Well, our heart is closed then. We're not open. We're not together in this. There's no trust. So that's why this deep listening is actually the most important part of communication. If there's deep listening, there's going to be right speech. There's going to be ethical speech. You don't have to have some rule. It's going to be there. So Milarepa is my favorite bodhisattva for listening, because Milarepa is often depicted as seated on a mountainside with his right hand cupped to his ear, listening intently to the song of the Dharma. The song of the Dharma. Which is all sound. All sound is the song of the Dharma. If we listen. All sound. Even when someone's upset, that's the song of the Dharma. Even when someone is criticizing you. If you listen with your open heart, that's the song of the Dharma. It is. It is. So, unskillful speech. I want to talk briefly about four kinds of unskillful speech. One I already talked about, not based on listening, which is actually the most important one. Second kind of unskillful speech is exaggerating. We feel like, I got to get her attention. I got to get his attention. So I'm going to exaggerate a little bit so she'll pay attention. He'll pay attention. Just a little bit, not too much. You know, they've heard this story before, so I'm just going to say it with a little more emotion, with a little more da-da-da, so they'll pay attention, because I need to be paid attention to. I'm the guiding teacher. I need everybody to pay attention to me, right? This is the ego's need, always to be paid attention to. So exaggerate. So if we just notice that, we could just laugh at ourselves and come back to just listen and just speaking straight. Not exaggerating, okay? Just speaking straight. Or exaggerating, but doing it in a humorful way. In a humorful way, in a light way. Right? Then the person feels light that we're talking to. They feel our lightness. Third kind of unskillful is, no, I wasn't upset. No, I wasn't upset. No! No, I wasn't upset. I'm not upset. British call that stiff upper lip. Well, okay, stiff upper lip. But that's not deep speech. That's not speech based on our intimacy with each other, our interconnectedness with each other. If you're upset, just allow yourself to share that. Allow yourself to share that in situations where you want to build trust. Now, if you don't want to build trust, then I mean, there's some situations you have to wall off. You have to set the boundaries. But for deep speech that is deeply connected, you want to build trust. So, not too much dip upper lip stuff, okay? And then the fourth one is keep Minnesota nice to a minimum. I'm not from Minnesota, so I get to laugh at Minnesota nice. I've only been here, 30 or 40 years, but I'll never be from Minnesota. Because you know how we are about where we first came from. It's like the the center of the universe or something. I don't know. So keep Minnesota nice to a minimum, okay? It's nice for a while, but it's pretty surfacey. It's pretty surfacey. So we had a... I've told this story once before, not for years. We had a French woman stay with us for our summer once, in the summer, in our house a few blocks from here. And we took her out to restaurants and, shopping and stuff. I don't go shopping, but must have taken her to restaurants. And she said to me, kind of at the end of her month, she couldn't wait to get home. And I said, oh, why? She said, it makes me nervous going in these cafes. And I said, but people are nice. And she said, that's just the problem. I don't feel it in their hearts. I want to go back to Paris where people are straight. Well, that's her, that was her take on it. People are kind of blunt and kind of rude in Paris. But that's just my take. That's my, I've been here for 40 years, right? That's my take. Anyway, not too much Minnesota nice, okay? Come back to your heart. Come back to just listening and being here with a person. So those are four limitations. So it's good for us sometimes to do an honest self-appraisal of our speech. An honest self-appraisal. Not judgmental. Not shame. Piper shame. I was bad. I'm going to be good. Forget that shit, okay? This is an honest self-appraisal because we want to connect. We want to be open. We want to enjoy being with people, being with the world. Notice how much you're motivated, how much we're motivated by our fears, by a desire to control myself, to control people, and control events, or by revenge. Or just wanting to get my own way. I'm the guiding teacher around here. Shouldn't I? I'm supposed to get my own way. Or something or other. Whatever we say to ourselves. Notice that. Notice where that need comes from. It's some basic insecurity, right? Some basic scaredness it comes from. So just notice that with your kind attention. And then return to the possibility of deep listening and right speech, to that possibility, always. And of course, on the spiritual path, and meditation is a spiritual path of sorts. On a spiritual path, we need to have people we can really share with, we can really get support from. So that we go deeper than just superficial, because sitting practice is not easy. Sitting practice, we get distracted, we get discouraged, we have questions, et cetera, right? Sitting practice sometimes starts off really cool till something happens. So many people, it starts off really cool. So if your practice didn't start off really cool, don't worry. It'll get cool for a while, and then it won't be cool. Because that's life. This is your mind. This is sitting practice with your mind. You expect your mind is just going to settle down like a tame dog in your lap for the next rest of your life? No way. No way. Only if you drug the dog, which a lot of people do. They drug their dogs. So here at Zen Center, we have practice periods, which some of you have gone to, and many of you maybe would like to join. We have one this fall and one next spring. And we've been doing them since I came. Oh, actually, we did them with my teacher, Katagiri Roshi, many years ago. But then they weren't done for a few years. Then we started doing them when I became head guiding teacher 13 years ago. Well, after a couple of years, I said, well, we need to have buddies. People need to have buddies in practice period because they need support. Well, I've gotten feedback sheets for 12 years about practice period, and what people seem to like best, there are exceptions, is having a buddy, having someone to hang out with to talk about their practice and get support. Not a big shot teacher, but a buddy. A buddy. Oh, interesting, huh? Interesting. Now, a few people get the wrong buddy and then they hate it. Well, I can't guarantee. You know, you get who you get. Then you can really practice your deep listening. You can really practice your deep listening. That's real practice, isn't it? And a couple of years ago, I wanted to introduce a mentor program. And people who've been around here for a while and are quote, priests, unquote, could mentor people. So any of you who are members can have a mentor. And we've got a whole bunch of people doing that now, too. And then there are one-to-ones with me and with the other teachers. And I'm not that scary, so come see me. Come see me. Bill is my main man now for people coming to see me. Ask him. He'll set it up. So, without openness, without honesty in communication, spiritual community withers. It withers. It withers on the vine. It dies. And all that's left are institutions and empty words. That's what's left, institutions and empty words. My teacher, my first teacher, Suzuki Roshi, came to the U.S. because he didn't have a good feeling about Japanese Buddhism. He didn't have a good, even though that was his culture, he didn't have a good feeling. He felt that it had devolved so that it was mostly institutions and empty words. It had devolved to that. So he was very excited to come to the U.S. Actually, he wanted to come from the time he was a young man. But finally he got to come when he was 55, 56. Very excited. Because he thought, oh, they don't have these institutions they need to support. I don't have all these truisms coming out of their so-called religious education. He was right. We didn't. We had beginner's mind. And, of course, you can always come back to beginner's mind just by being with what is, just being with yourself without comparing. Anytime you come back to that. But the institution often takes precedent over the practice, and then it dies. Things die. So I heard my teacher once give a talk about this, criticizing. Well, yeah, he was criticizing Japanese Buddhism, saying when he'd come here. And there was a woman named Jean who was in the front. This was on a Sunday with about this many people in the room, and Jean was sitting to his right, maybe, I don't know. Or his left, but let's make it to his right. Why not? And Jean had been in Japan. She had gone over to Japan to practice, and she'd only been back for a couple of months. So she was not happy with what he said. So afterwards, she went up to him and said, well, what about all this good stuff? And you suggested I go, and I went, and I had a good experience, and whoa. And he said, okay, Jean, you give the Dharma talk next Sunday, and you talk. So she gave the talk next Sunday. That was his approach. It worked. So speaking untruthfully is part of this. Speaking untruthfully, not saying our truth. Of course, sometimes we're so confused we don't know our truth is. Well, maybe we shouldn't be saying anything then. Or maybe if we're in a situation with someone we trust, we can really trust deeply, we can talk about our confusion. But not saying untruthful stuff, right? That's basically selfish. Why are we selfish? Because we're afraid, like I was saying. Because we want to protect. We've been burned by other people. We've been burned. We want to protect ourselves. That makes sense, doesn't it? We all feel that way. We've all been burned. So we need to protect ourselves. But we also need to notice how we close down. The more we focus on protecting, the more we focus on pushing away the outside world, which is not any separate, not any different from us, even though it looks different. Not any different. So speaking from the heart and avoiding gossip as much as possible. The two don't go together. Meaning, if you speak from the heart, you won't be gossiping too much. You won't be gossiping too much. And you won't talk about people behind their backs too much. You speak more directly to them. Then you're taking responsibility for your own feelings. And sometimes you feel like you can't be talk directly to them. So I can't talk directly to Stacy, so I'm going to talk to Benton about Stacy. But I need to be careful about that. I need to be careful about that, don't I? Be careful. Because that's not creating camaraderie either with... Well, it is. Benton thinks he's special because the guiding teacher is telling him something about his... But that kind of camaraderie is very limited, very rigid boundary, which we've got a special deal going and everybody else doesn't have it. We need to be careful of that. We need to notice that. And, you know, us psychologists call that triangulation, right? We need to be careful when we're triangulating. Be careful. It's not bad. Not shame, Piper shame. It's just something that cuts us off. And if I'm not ready to speak with Stacy about this, whatever it is, then I just do some mind fasting. Just some mind fasting until I'm ready. Take a while. There's no hurry. If we want to deeply show our affection for someone or for the world or for each other, there's no hurry. Mind fasting is something that takes a lot of practice. A lot of practice. So we need to notice when we're criticizing, when we're blaming, when we're complaining, and when we just see faults and weaknesses everywhere and everything. Sometimes when we're in a certain mood, we see that. So let's just notice that. Notice how we're settling into sort of a self-hypnotic trance. Notice that. And then notice that that's due to some neediness, some insecurity. And just breathe into it. No need to say anything about it. Just breathe into it with your kindness. Your breath is kind. It just circulates throughout your body, being kind to all of your organs. Be kind with it. Just surf your breath. Just surf it. Sometimes the surf's up, sometimes it's down. Sometimes the surf is very fast. Just surf it. Sometimes the waves are very slow. Just surf it. So, speaking in a kind and sensitive manner creates a world in which we enjoy living. We enjoy hanging out with each other. We enjoy hanging out with the inanimate and inanimate beings all around us. And we don't even differentiate much between them. They're all cool. They all have the same life. They all have the same vigor. Even we might not notice it. They do. Even if it's a stone, what vigor, what life there is in that stone. If you just deeply listen to it, deeply watch it, it doesn't matter. You can communicate with all beings by just communicating with one being. So then we can relax. When we do this, there's some relaxation that sets in. It's not the relaxation that we strive to do with some relaxation tape. Well, that's fine. Use a relaxation tape. It's a relaxation that comes from just listening, just being present with this person, with their heartache, with this stone, with its story of all of its decades and centuries of life. And we're free from the constant warfare, verbal warfare that we get into, internally and externally. And all we need to do is look around the world at all of the fights that are going on, the wars that are going on, and see how they reflect our own war and how we manifest those wars. But learning to do this is a beginning to stop the war. Begin to stop the war. So, Katagiri Roshi, the founding teacher here, in his book, Return to Silence, talks about speech. Talks about right speech, ethical speech. He says, kind speech is not merely speaking with an ingratiating voice, like a cat purring. This very naturally, consciously or unconsciously, is trying to get a favor by fawning or flattering. He was always using the dictionary. He was always using an English-American dictionary and trying to translate his words, fawning or flattering. I can just see him preparing for his talk, looking up those words, trying to translate the kanji. Fawning or flattering. This is not kind speech. Kind speech is not the usual sense of kindness. It can appear in various ways, but we should remember that it must constantly be based on compassion. Under all circumstances, that compassion is always giving somebody support or help or a chance to grow. Always giving somebody support or help or a chance to grow. And that compassion sometimes can be a little sharp. Sometimes it can be a little sharp because Katagiri went on to talk about how sometimes his teacher said some critical things to him and how he didn't like it. But in retrospect, he realized that those criticisms were helpful to him. So, we need to exercise the critical mind. We shouldn't throw it out. And the more we trust someone, the more we can have a reciprocal relationship with her. Criticism is allowed and even welcome. But it's not this nasty criticism. It's loving criticism. It's loving. And Suzuki Roshi, my first teacher, so my first teacher is Katagiri Roshi, the guy who founded this place. My second teacher is Katagiri Roshi, the guy who founded this place. My first teacher is Suzuki Roshi from San Francisco, where I grew up, Palo Alto, where I grew up. His teacher also was not always that kind to him, although his teacher was kind to him. He used kind speech, but he used sometimes critical speech. And so the name of my first teacher's biography is what? Anybody know what the name of his biography is?
Crooked Cucumber.
Yes, Crooked Cucumber. Well, he had his teacher gave him a beautiful Dharma name. You know, we do these ceremonies, and People are going through initiation now, and they'll all get beautiful Dharma names, which will be aspirational or reflect who they are, who they want to be. But Suzuki's teacher never called him by his Dharma name. Suzuki, my first teacher, was very absent-minded. Very absent-minded. He was always messing things up. He was so absent-minded. So his teacher started calling him Crooked Cucumber. Crooked Cucumber. Where's Crooked Cucumber? Where's Crooked Cucumber? No, of course, we would never do that now. Child psychology, oh boy, you get in trouble, right? I get in trouble as a psychologist. Luckily, I've retired, so I get to do this stuff now. I'm going to do that stuff, you know. You warp their egos for the rest of their lives. I understand. But Suzuki had to acknowledge, had to deeply accept his flaws, and then learn to laugh at them. He was a crooked cucumber. He began, by the time I knew him, he delighted in being a crooked cucumber. He was proud that he was, not that he still tried to remember things. He always tried, but he knew. He knew. We're just who we are, you know. This is the zen of being who we are. We're just who we are. If you're a crooked cucumber, just be a crooked cucumber. And your teacher might need to point that out to you. Or some friend or something. You don't have to take it personally. Oh, no. Oh, no. Woe is me. I can never be the great Zen master or the great enlightened person. This little absent-minded guy became the big deal in the whole world. Before he died and then after he died, it became even a bigger deal. So what's happening there? You don't know. You just give your heart. You listen. You do your best. You do your meditation every day, your mind fasting. You try to communicate with integrity, with love. That's all. So right speech, ethical speech, is in a lot in the Buddhist canons. It's the third step on the Eightfold Path. The third step. The second step is right thought. Well, right thought is cool, but if you don't speak your thought, if you don't tell the person how much you appreciate them, what good is it thinking it? If you want to connect with them, you should tell them how much you appreciate them. You should tell them. That's why we have right thought, so we can have right speech, or ethical thought, or whatever, heartfelt thought. I don't really like the terms either ethical or right. Heartfelt, how about that, heartfelt? For the time being, for the being time or something. So the third step, and after that comes right action. So our speech leads into our action. Our speech envelops and supports our action. Thought, speech, and action. One unit, but the speech is the one that is the cohesive force in the triad, the cohesive force in the triad. And some people are going through an initiation ceremony in the fall, and they've been sewing these raksus like I'm wearing. And others of you who aren't doing this, you can do this someday. It's not an exclusive club. You can do it. And, one of the central practices is the precepts. The precepts. So these are norms for behavior. These are norms for behavior that reflect our interdependence, our interconnectedness, our undividedness from everything and everyone. They reflect those. They reflect those. And if we feel like they don't reflect them, then at least we're pointing toward them. We're trying to move toward them. It's good. If you try to move toward them, they're here. There's no gap. There's no gap. Not in Zen. There's no gap. You just make your effort. So and then we have out of the ten pure precepts or ten whatever they are precepts. Bodhisattva precepts I like better than pure, although lots of the literature says pure. 10 Bodhisattva precepts, three of them are on speech. Three of them are about speech. It's very interesting, isn't it? Three of them are on speech. Not to speak falsely, but to speak truthfully. Not to slander, but to speak with kindness. Not to praise self while putting others down. Three out of ten. So I know a woman a little bit who's a Dharma teacher in the South. She was doing this initiation with some of her students, where they've been sewing these beautiful rock suits. That's what we call them, rock suits. We could call them bibs, I suppose, but we really don't. They're not high enough to. I guess they're maybe there for eating spaghetti, really. Have to pin them up. So they were sewing the rock suits, and we go over the precepts. So the people who are doing initiation this fall have been going over the precepts as they do the sewing, as they get ready. So she had her 9-year-old daughter there with her, and her 9-year-old daughter wanted to be part of the whole deal. And so her 9-year-old daughter was sewing one of these too. So she could do it. Why not? Initiate your daughter or your dog or your, whatever, initiate her. I mean, it means join with them in their lives so they join you in your life. Well, I don't think your animal knows how to sew. But anyway, she was sewing, or was interested in sewing. Your animal wants to chew up the rock suit, chew up the material. Well, that's a different kind of Dharma transmission going on there. It can be very deep and very loving. Very deep and very loving. But I'm getting off course here. So she was sewing one of these, and she said, "Mom, I want you to talk to me about the precepts too. You're giving these talks to these other guys, these adults. What about me?" She said, "Okay, well, I'll talk to you about them." So here's what her mother says in retrospect. She says, "So we went through the precepts together one by one. I read the first precept, 'A disciple of Buddha does not kill.' She immediately responded, 'Oh, I know what that means. No problem. No problem.'" Oh, pretty cool, huh? "And after each precept, she had the same response until we came to 'A disciple of the Buddha does not slander.' She hesitated and said, 'Wait a minute, does that mean if someone is being mean to me or hurting my feelings, and if I go and tell my friends how mean that person is, that's slander?'" Her mom nodded. She said, "I'll try, but I don't think I can keep that one." So, you know, we can't keep them all. We can't keep them all. We're just fallible human beings. Let's be compassionate to ourselves and to each other. Let's try. But we know we're going to fall down on the next moment. But we can get up. We can get up. We have two good legs. Two good legs. We don't have to make a federal case out of what we did. Just get up. Just get up." And my first teacher, Suzuki Roshi, talked about precepts too. Some. More after I left him than before I left, so I'm glad that I left when I did. I don't know why I did it more later. Anyway, I did hear him give this talk before I left about precepts. And he talked in this talk that I'm going to read from about right speech. And he talks about it as being, I'll read it to you now. Then you can see what he's talking about. He talks about the one which now we translate differently. Now we translate it, "Do not intoxicate the mind of self or others." I think that's the translation. But somehow he did his own translation back then, and he didn't know English very well. So he translated it as, "Do not sell liquor." I don't know. He did. And we didn't know anything, so we figured that was about selling liquor. And we were fine with that because we didn't do liquor. We did all everything else but liquor. So, so we loved this precept. We'd sell lots of grass, lots of other illegal drugs. We wouldn't sell liquor. That was gross. So here he says, do not sell liquor means not to boast or emphasize the advantages of things. If you boast about the profundity of Buddha's teaching, you are selling a kind of liquor to the people. Any spiritual teaching by which we are intoxicated is liquor. Do not sell alcohol means absolute freedom from all teachings. We should keep the precepts and yet not be bound by them. So, absolute freedom from all the teachings means resting right here, right here, without trying to do anything other than just be, just be, just be. Whatever it is, just resting with this breathing, with this space, with these beings, just resting. It's our natural state to rest. I know you don't feel that lots of the time, but it's our natural state. We rest in motion. We rest in motion. The still point of the turning world. The world's always turning. Always turning. The still point is always here. It's always here. It's always there. It's always there. It's always there. Even though the world seems like it's turning very fast. Very fast. Out of control. Well, you don't need to control. You don't need to control. It controls itself. Just be with it. It controls itself. And we need help sometimes. We get off by having these a teaching, like kind speech, a teaching. And often we mess up and we don't do right speech. We do wrong speech, even though I don't like that term. We do wrong. We do bad. We do hurtful speech to ourselves and others. We do superficial speech. We do speech that's so nice that other people want to throw up because they think we're not being true. We're not being true. That's what my French... I don't want to say this anymore. I'll say this one time. She felt she got nauseous after being in all these public places with Minnesotans, because she felt like we were being true to their hearts. Well, that was her, that's not me. But I do feel that a little bit sometimes. It's never too late. We make mistakes, we fall down. We get in conflicts with people. We diss them, we ignore them, we run away from them. It's never too late. Never too late. Even in the moment before you die, it's not too late to reach out. To reach out. Not too late. So my second teacher, the teacher who founded the Sim, who had been my friend and teacher in San Francisco first, but he was a junior teacher there. Now he was a senior teacher. That's what happens when you get old. You become the senior teacher. And everybody thinks you're wise. Well, maybe you're a little bit wise, but you don't know anything about wise. You just are what you are. what was I talking about? Yes. Yes, so after I've been practicing here for a long time, the priest here for a long time, like 10, 15 years, my teacher here was getting older. And he was getting more formal in the way he wanted to do things, more adhering to the Japanese forms. And then as now, I was more interested in trying to do this in an American way. I mean, I don't really know what American is, but in a way that felt natural and felt connected to my family and my friends. And so I was not so into the formal. In fact, I was not into it at all. I used to think, how did I end up in this? I only ended up in this. I mean, rather than some of these other Buddhist meditation where there's not so much formality because of Suzuki. And I found him. And at that time in San Francisco, there was nothing else except a crazy Chinese Zen teacher who did... What's that when you burn yourself with incense? What's that called? Do you know what that's called? Huh? What's it called? Oh, you know. Anyway, he showed us his scars on his arms where he yourself with incense. That's something you could read about it online, some Buddhist thing. I mean, Buddhists are weird. Well, we're all weird, you know. Everybody's weird. Buddhists are, but if you think Buddhists are less weird than anybody else, good luck. Go live with a hedgehog. You'll find out how weird they are. at some point, I thought, oh, gee, I'm not going to do this anymore. I'm just going to drop out and sit on my own. So I dropped out and sat on my own. But I didn't talk to him. He knew how I was feeling, but I never really talked with him. I just left. Well, that's not kind speech, is it? That's not kind speech. Not kind speech. And maybe that must have been my own fear. I don't remember, but it must have been my own fear. It must have been my own fear. We need to get to know our own fear. Get to know it. Then, a few years later, I don't know how many years, maybe 4 or 5 years later, he got cancer. He got very sick with cancer. And so I thought, well, I'll go visit him in the hospital. So I went and visited him in the hospital. And, you know, I didn't go through the protocol here of going to visit him. I don't like protocol. I thought if I go through the protocol here, I won't get to go visit him, so I'll just go visit him. If you spend your whole life following protocol, you become dead. I mean, you should follow it some, but not too much. Not too much. So I went and visited him in the hospital, and there he was. And I told him that I was so sorry about his illness. So sorry. And I told him how helpful he had been to me over the years. I didn't lie and pretend that, you know, I loved what I felt was the rigidity about the form, but he'd been really helpful in many ways. Many ways. And actually, the form even was very, very good for me. Very good for me. And now I love the form. I just needed to do it in my own way. We're so stubborn, but we should appreciate our stubbornness and just be with it. Just be with it. So, then it was easy for me to come back here then, because I had done that one. And then he died. I didn't know he was going to die just like that. But you wouldn't know when you're going to die just like that. But even after someone dies, it's not too late. It's not too late to do kind speech to them. Not too late. Never too late. Never too late. You don't have to worry about your karma from the past. You can avow it, but it's always the first time within your beginner's mind to reach out. Always the first time. So that's what I want to say for tonight. And I see I went over time by 10 whole minutes, but I will still see if there are any questions or comments before I close. Any questions or comments?
I have one thing. I was just noticed sort of like the last 3 weeks how much silly names or like speech has to do with not saying what you're thinking. And taking the time to see like before it comes out.
Very good. Very important. Yeah.
I really enjoyed the part when you said that sometimes the right speech is also sharing with people when you feel well for them or when you appreciate them.
Yes.
And oftentimes it's too easy to just not share because we get embarrassed or we get busy.
Yes.
And I really choked up, but I feel like, yes, I feel like calling right now everybody and, you know, yeah. I really appreciate what you did this time, or really, you know, I feel this way for you. But it's so easy to just put that behind. You know?
Yeah. Good. Yes. Yeah. Good. Good. Anybody else? Anything more? Yeah, Benton.
You know all about Minnesota nights. I'm thinking of a fifth generation Minnesota.
Oh, are you?
And one time I was at a party, and this was when we were between dogs. Deb came up to me with a friend, and she said, "Ben, how about a Pomeranian?" And I said, "That wouldn't be my first choice." And she turned to her friend and said, "That's Minnesota nights." She set me up.
Good example. Thank you for that confession.
Let me know Minnesota because I thought that was a great answer.